supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
For you this time out, cats and kittens, about lady slipper orchids. They appeared in a lady's garden. What should she do to keep them alive, and can she get them to multiply? We'll answer those burning questions after lots of your fascinating phone call questions, comments, tips, tricks, etc. At 1-888-346-9499. Helen, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I am doing well, Helen. How are you?
Hanging in there.
And where is Helen hanging in?
Vineland, New Jersey.
What can we do for Helen in Vineland?
I have these organic asparagus purple passion roots.
Oh, okay, good.
And I do have an organic garden. It's probably the soil needs to be limed. I just had it tested on my strawberry patch, and it's way too acidic, so I should get the rest of it.
What is way?
4 point something, 4.3.
Yo, you're kidding me.
No.
You should have a blueberry field there.
Well, I have 4 blueberry bushes in my strawberry patch because I thought they'd be good together, or no?
No.
Oh.
That was a bad idea.
Okay.
But the pH of that soil is perfect for blueberries. So the strawberries transplant very easily.
Move them.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Now, don't move them in the morning on a sunny day.
Okay.
Move them during a cloudy day or in the evening and make sure they get well watered afterwards.
Even when they have berries on them, or should I just wait till they're done fruiting?
And they are producing well.
They are, actually.
Eventually, you want to move the strawberries out of there. And
okay.
You want to leave the blueberries there, and you want to do nothing to that soil to change the acidity. That's what blueberries need.
Oh, okay.
And it's very hard for many gardeners to achieve. Getting
Is it
soil
because of all the coffee grinds I keep dumping in here?
Oh, you should stop doing that.
Okay.
That's going to inhibit fruiting. That's all nitrogen. And yes, it is very acidic. Coffee grounds have very limited use in the garden. The only safe thing really to do with coffee grounds is to feed azaleas and rhododendrons after they're done blooming.
Oh, okay.
But you have very specifically made your soil incredibly acidic and probably too rich in nitrogen to get the maximum fruit production.
Oh, okay.
Now, you know the asparagus needs a dedicated site. They need their own house. They need their own room.
Okay.
And nothing else can be planted over top of or near them, and they will spread. They will extend out. So it is much better to, say, build a raised bed that's 4x8, but just plant them down the center of it. I don't know. How many roots do you have?
I have 10.
You have 10. So you're going to need, you know, you need like a foot of space between these crowns.
Okay.
And I would leave at least a couple of feet on the outskirts. Now, you don't have to put them in a raised bed. They require good drainage, but, you know, you're going to have to excavate the soil down to around a foot.
A foot down.
And then bust it up at the bottom, you know, with just with
what
a garden fork or something. Then you can put some more soil back in, and then I think you put the crowns about 6 to 8 inches below the soil line where you are. And then you want to refill the rest of that with incredibly rich material. Nitrogen-rich, but not acidic like your coffee grounds. This is one of the best uses for composted, fully composted horse manure. Manure that has no objectionable smell and has no heat to it anymore. Half horse manure and half compost to fill in over top of them would be a delight to these plants.
Okay.
But there is a relationship between asparagus and well, quote, well-rotted manure.
Okay.
It really seems to be symbiotic. Again, this is a perennial vegetable. These are going to come up year after year for decades.
Okay.
So this is not a once and done. And they won't move around as much as raspberries, but they will expand their turf.
Okay.
So this year you're going to let them grow. You know, you'll plant them. You'll probably get a couple things break the surface. If you do, just leave them alone. Let them, they will form these beautiful fern-like fronds. Let those stand over winter. As soon as things start warming up in the spring, you can cut those fronds. And over winter, you should have a very light shredded leaf mulch on the bed. Weeds are your biggest enemy with an asparagus patch.
Okay.
And then next year, you will get some shoots coming up. You are not supposed to harvest any the first year,
right,
which can be difficult. But mostly you do need to leave them alone the first year because they're going to collect the solar energy when they turn into those fronds that's going to feed the roots. Then you can begin harvesting lightly the third year, and after that it's off to the races. In the future, you will stop harvesting in the spring when the new spears coming up are smaller than a pencil.
Okay.
All right, and for the rest of your garden, the stuff that you've made too acidic with the coffee grounds, don't use lime. Find somebody with wood ashes from a wood-burning stove or a fireplace.
Okay.
Ashes from a hardwood fire will bring the pH up as well as lime, but they're going to add fabulous trace nutrients to your garden as well.
Oh, okay.
All right, Helen?
Thank you very much, Mike. I really enjoy your show.
Thank you. Good luck with your asparagus adventure.
Thanks. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Steve, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike. Big fan. Love your show. I've been listening to you for a long time.
Thank you, Steve. Where are you?
I'm in Carlisle, Pennsylvania.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Steve in Carlisle?
I'm a sports turf manager, and I've been working on sports fields for 26 years, managing them. And in the last 7 years, I've been working as a consultant with schools and parks and recs, and one of the biggest components of what I work with is obviously organic materials to help them build their soils so that they have a better quality of turf grass for their fields. One of the things that we've been working with is it's a really nice quality compost top dressing material that's screened, but the pH on this seems to be up around 8.
Yikes.
Now,
that
I don't know
is... alkaline in the extreme. That's like the Death Valley days.
So what, it doesn't ever seem to cause any decline or any setback on the turf grass.
Really?
Sometimes when we apply it, if it's hot, we do get a little bit of tip burn, but we don't see any turf decline.
Now, was this mushroom soil, which tends to have a high pH?
No, sir. It's actually horse manure, cow manure, and then the bedding from the barns. That's what my question is do you think that the sawdust that possibly could be used in the barns may be driving this pH up?
So this is not compost. This is composted horse manure.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, which is ideal for lawns because they're not fruiting. I don't think we're ever going to find out why the pH is high. But, for instance, that's not very different than what I asked you about. Mushroom soil of locally available product has a very high percentage of horse manure in the original mix, and it tends to, even when well composted, even when well aged, some batches have a fairly high alkalinity level. Have you tested the turf to see what the soil tests at in the turf?
We check the pH early in the season, once every other year, and you know our pH is typically around 7 or thereabouts.
So it is right at neutral already. Because what I was thinking is, in areas with high rainfall, lawn soil tends to get a little acidic, and so people add lime. If your lawn was naturally acidic, you adding a compost with a pH of 8 would be like the ultimate brilliance. Because you'd be adjusting the pH and feeding at the same time.
Right.
You know what I might do is just mix some sulfur or some peat moss in with the compost. Just try to bring it down even half a point and get it a little more towards neutral and keep testing that lawn turf. And if the soil test of the turf goes over 7, then you really know you got to start paying attention. But if the lawn starts acting normal, in a situation like yours, the soil test would typically read a little bit of 6, because a lot of your fellow lawn care people, they're spreading lime every year to bring the pH up.
Right.
So if it ever drops down to an acidic level, then your compost is perfect. But for now, I would temper it. It's so easy to do. And, you know, peat moss is going to loosen it up. It's going to be a natural antibiotic in there. Or sulfur, which will bring it down much more rapidly. If the lawn was 7, which is neutral, and your compost is 8, which is alkaline, and we're really, let's be honest, we're shooting for 6.5, a little bit on the acidic side, I would mix some naturally acidic stuff in gently with the compost, just to bring it down a little bit.
I appreciate you taking the call, and, you know, the things that I've been working with on these sports fields for the past 8 years has been more of managing the soil and not the plant any longer, because we've all gotten caught up on growing grass that we've forgotten about, you know, the lifeblood of it is the soil. And once we started feeding the soil and getting it right with biology, the results have been just absolutely phenomenal, and our input costs have dropped dramatically.
I want to clone you. Keep up the good work, Steve.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
All right, you take care. Stay in touch.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind our listeners in cooler climes, or even warm ones on a freaky cold spring night, that tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, and other tropical favorites should be protected on evenings when the temperature dips into the low 40s or below. Row covers are the perfect protection. Cardboard boxes over top the plants are fine. But no plastic! You're not the only living thing that needs to breathe. Just don't go snatching back that Saran wrap just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fascinating phone calls and the care and propagation of lady slipper orchids. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
You Bet Your Garden is made possible in part by Burpee. Burpee offers seeds and live plants, edibles, flowers and perennials, treasured heirlooms, and high-performing hybrids. More information online at burpee.com.
You're listening to WHYY-FM.
Jenkins Arboretum proudly supports WHYY. Spring is in full bloom at Jenkins Arboretum and Gardens, a 48-acre public garden located in Devon. Jenkins is open to the public at no charge every day from 8 a.m. to sunset, with paths to walk and explore on your own or with your family. Enjoy rhododendrons, azaleas, flowering dogwoods, and other native plants and wildflowers. Details online at jenkinsarboretum.org.
The WHYY forecast: sunny with a high around 80 degrees this afternoon. Tonight mostly clear with a low near 54 degrees. Tomorrow mostly sunny with a high around 80. Monday showers likely with a chance with a high near 74. And Tuesday cloudy with a chance of showers and a high near 75 degrees. It's 73 degrees in Center City, Philadelphia at 11:19. This is WHYY-FM. The WHYY Youth Media Awards honors the best videos created by area students in middle and high schools. You can enter your film today at whyy.org/awards.
The Wildwoods present a Celebration of Heroes Festival May 25th through the 27th, paying tribute to America's military, veterans, and first responders. Information at wildwoodsnj.com/heroes. The Wildwoods support WHYY.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, lady slipper orchids, the Native American orchid of note, the most prolific Native American orchid, grows in the dirt, very unusual, beautiful, a real treasure. What do you do if they show up in your yard? How do you protect them? We'll tell you all about it when we get to the question of the week. Meantime, lots more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Michelle, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Well, thank you, Michelle. Where are you?
I am in Phoenixville, PA.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Michelle in the land of the Phoenix, where gardens must just rise from the ashes year after year?
Well, sort of rise. I have a peony bush, well, a couple, and I've had ant problems all spring, so which has been treated, but I think the ants are not around to open the peonies.
Okay, let's back up a little bit here. I heard you harumph when you said treated. What exactly did we do here? Did we?
I had an exterminating company come in to treat the inside and the outside around the house.
And did they do it intelligently, or did they spray toxins around for you to inhale?
No, it was a reputable place.
So that means they sprayed toxins around for you to inhale?
Probably.
Yeah. That does not get rid of ant problems long term.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of smoke and mirrors, like the mosquito trucks in
right.
the summertime. Ants are the most numerous creatures on the planet, either ants or termites. It's kind of a toss-up. And the ants you see in your house, if you are infested with ants, if ants are everywhere you turn, every cupboard you open is filled with ants.
No.
That's one half of 1% of the colony.
Uh-huh.
And so there is an endless supply of new ants that can come to take their place as soon as these poisons detoxify
okay.
a little bit. So what I want you to do in the future, if you have ant problems that you find intolerable, is go out and get simple boric acid bait traps for ants. They're available at any hardware store, any home center.
Mm-hmm.
The active ingredient will either be boric acid, boron, borate, sodium tetraborate. It'll have some version mm-hmm. of the element boron in the name. And it's a sweet bait. The ants come to it. It's a very low dose of boric acid, so it doesn't kill the ants.
Okay.
They take it back to the nest. They begin feeding this sweet bait to the entire colony. It gets into the queen. And then after about 6 or 7 days, the boric acid builds up inside the ants and kills them all, including the all-important queen.
Mm-hmm.
So there are no more workers to come out. Now, the good news about your peonies, along with forsythia and firethorn and tulip poplars, have what are called extrafloral nectarines. These are plant parts that pump out extra amounts of sugar.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, such as the forsythia, this is to lure specific insects to pollinate. Nobody has any idea, I don't believe, why peonies do this and why they pump out this extra sugar so early in their budding process. But of course, ants are attracted to sugar like ants to sugar. And so they cover the peonies licking off this extra floral nectarine liquid.
Right.
And so over untold years, people have seen this process happening, and they assume that the ants are like Max Fleischer cartoon ants. And when everybody goes to bed, the ants are pulling open the buds to expose the flowers.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth of the matter is they're just there for the sugar. Peonies do not need ants, and the ants do not harm the peonies, and they don't help the peonies. The flower buds will open the same day they would have with or without ants, and I hope you're experiencing the same thing I am at home. I have a record number of flower buds on my peonies this year after a disappointing season last year.
Yes, it does seem rather prolific this year.
So I can't wait to see it. But I've had years with ants. I've had years without ants. This mm-hmm. process has fascinated me. I've researched it with peony experts and with entomologists. And everybody agrees they are just there. They have nothing to do with the process. So they're not necessary. You don't have to get out there and do anything to help the flowers open. They will do it beautifully on their own.
Well, that works for me.
All right.
Excellent.
All right, Michelle, good luck. Enjoy your peonies.
Thank you very much.
All right, you take care.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Michael, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike. This is Michael from Lookout Mountain, Georgia. How are you?
Lookout Mountain, Georgia. Excellent.
Yep.
I love that name. What can we do for Michael from Lookout Mountain?
I have a Japanese maple that's about 18 years old. It's growing in a half of a whiskey barrel. The tree actually came with the house, and 5 years ago I moved in the house. The tree has now outgrown its spot, which is sitting right next to a small patio, and then some steps going down to another patio. And so I want to move the tree. The problem is that the tree is grown through the bottom of that whiskey barrel. And I just want to move the tree over a couple of feet and then build another container around it. But I'm afraid, like I said, all the roots have gone down into the soil. And I just wanted to see if you had any suggestions. The soil, by the way, is generally very, very shallow because I'm on the side of a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of rock and everything everywhere.
The first thing I want to do is tell our listeners who are not in the deep south that their trees would die unless they were in the heat sink of a big city being contained in a container over winter. But you don't really get much of a winter, do you, Michael?
Actually, it can go down to 5 degrees where I am, and we had about four, I think it was about four springs ago, we had a kind of a very strange cold snap, you know, in the first couple of weeks of April, and I thought it had killed the tree. I cut the tree back just tremendously where all the places where it had died, and that is another reason. I just moved into the house, and so, you know, it wasn't such an issue, but now the thing has flourished.
I can assure you that no part of that tree would have died over that winter if its roots had been totally under the frost line. Perennials really should not be grown in containers except in special situations. I fear maybe you've waited too long, though, man. What I mean, summer has started down in Georgia, hadn't it?
Oh, yes. Summer is definitely here now. Yeah.
Can you wait? Does this have to be done right away?
Oh, no. There's no time limit. I've got to do it in the next year.
Right. So here's the plan. We're going to leave it alone this summer. We're going to wait, you know, till it drops its leaves. The best time to do this would be in December or January, the closest thing you have to a dormant period. You want to plant this. It's going to go in the ground now, right?
No, I'd rather just still keep it in the whiskey barrel. The problem is the soil depth where I live, it's hard enough to get enough of a hole to put in a mailbox post.
So you're going to get a new barrel?
I was going to move it in its barrel, and then around that barrel, I was going to have somebody construct for me kind of a stone planter, you know, and then I would disassemble the barrel and then just kind of fill in with dirt. So
you can just fill it in with dirt and let the barrel rot away inside.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, when we do this, this is cowboy gardening at its finest, Michael. Yeah, I would not do anything else. I would just drag the rotten barrel over, build your little fortress around it, and then fill in with not your lousy soil from what you're saying. I would move in a lot of soil-free mix at that point,
okay.
Something like Pro-Mix or whatever is available down in Georgia, but a nice light soil-free mix. Now, make sure you don't expose the tree more to the elements. It should not go further away from the house. It should not be pushed further towards prevailing winds. It should not go lower because we're still dealing with a container here, although the container is going to get more massive, which is good. You want the tree to be in a sheltered location, you know, as close to walls as possible, protected from winter winds, and not down in a low spot. Always try to move up, not down, because cold collects low. When we get to January, get some friends with some shovels and just dig around the outskirts. Don't try to dig it up, but just dig around the outskirts as much as you can. Loosen up the soil and then wet the soil. Totally soak the soil. You know, you're going to lose a bit more of the barrel, but I want that soil really saturated. And
okay.
I want you to loosen up the outsides with shovels. And then I want you guys to play Rock the Baby really slow, really gently. It may take you a half an hour. Just rock it, rock it, rock it. Our goal is to free up as much of the root system as possible because you're going to do some root pruning here no matter what. But that's not the worst thing that can happen, especially when the tree is dormant. And so it's very important to do this at the middle point of whatever kind of winter you get.
Okay.
Rock it out as long as there are feeder roots and a lot of root systems still attached. I don't think it's going to do any harm. It's going to be sound asleep, too, which is going to be good. And then move it into its new planter, and then make sure you treat it like a new tree for the rest of the end of the winter, and especially when the weather warms up in the spring and summer. Make sure this new container has good drainage, but make sure that soil doesn't dry out as the plant gets acclimated to its new location. And I would not be surprised if you use some patience, really soak the soil, bust up the outsides, and rock it till you get some roots out. I think you'll have a total transplant success.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
All right. Good luck, man.
Appreciate it.
Take care. 1-888-346-9499. Peggy Ann, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
I'm calling from Brookhaven.
Brookhaven,
Pennsylvania.
Okay. Where's that?
21 miles south of Philadelphia.
Well, there you go. I'll get in my car right now.
Heading toward the Delaware border.
Okay, very. Do you do that often, Peggy Ann? Are you on the run from the law quite a bit? Is that?
Well, I did work in Delaware for 20 years, but I'm retired.
Oh, I thought you outran the Stadies once. That was going to be a...
No, I didn't.
Yeah, she's got her supercharged 8-367 under the hood.
Oh, no, I just have a Saturn, a six-cylinder, but I'll tell you, she's a peppy little car.
Wrong show, Peggy Ann. All right, what can we do for you in a gardening topic here?
All right, having trouble with Satan's evil servants.
The squirrels!
Yes, and the question I have is, I have a fig tree that I am so excited about. I planted it late September. It came up this spring. It already had 10 figs on it.
That's amazing.
And it's just a little bitty thing. Maybe not even 3 feet tall. It's only maybe 2 feet tall.
That's in your advantage right now.
And already one fig is missing and one has a bite mark.
Oh, and I bet it's a rodenture bite mark.
Yes, it is. A fuzzy-tailed rodenture.
Well.
And how can I keep my figs?
Are you or anyone in your neighborhood feeding squirrels or birds?
No.
No, okay, so you don't have any bird feeders out or anything?
Well, they do next door, but they have nothing in their feeders.
Oh,
because
okay.
The squirrels come.
Okay, good, good. Tell them if they want to attract a lot of birds to their property, suet in the wintertime and a lot of fresh water in the summertime.
Okay.
So you have limited options. Squirrels are evil.
Yes.
They're incredibly acrobatic.
Yes.
They're evil.
Yes.
They have a lot of time on their hands.
Yes.
And they're evil.
Yes.
Your advantage here with a small fig tree is the first thing I'm going to suggest is a physical barrier.
All right.
That you surround the thing with something with wire whose openings are too small for squirrels to get through.
All right.
That could be chicken wire. I think rabbit fencing would foot the bill. I wish you could see what I use for my tomato cages. I can't guarantee you can find it anywhere. But I got it at a big box home center once. And it is welded wire, like animal fencing.
All right.
But it's coated with green vinyl. And the advantage is, unlike regular metal cages, it seems to disappear. So it's kind of like invisible fencing.
Well, we live in a development that has, I don't have much ground at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't want a big fence. But we are going to put a green chain link fence that has that coating on it.
Oh, okay.
Around the property. But that means nothing to a squirrel.
Right.
But
so
that idea of that green, what did you call it? A rabbit fencing or something?
It was animal fencing that had a green plastic coating on it.
I will tell my husband the minute he gets home.
Because you could cage this thing as if it were a big tomato plant inside a 5 or 6 foot tall circle of this material.
Right.
And then you would simply cut another piece to cover the top.
Right.
Affix that with a twist tie.
Right.
And so you can then get in.
Right.
But the squirrels cannot. That's probably your best answer. Because the other answer is this fig tree by your front door?
No, it's on the side of our house.
So if somebody were to shoot water at this fig tree, would anything like a UPS driver or you be impacted?
No, nobody would be impacted.
Get what's called a motion-activated sprinkler.
I've heard of them.
There is a brand, the oldest brand is called the Scarecrow. And this is something, it comes with a stake, you stick it in the ground, hook it up to your hose, turn your hose on full blast, put a battery into the head of the thing, point it at the area you wish to protect, and nothing happens until something breaks the beam. And then it scoots them away with cold water.
That's great.
It works against deer, thieving neighbors, dogs, cats, Canada geese. And knowing that the squirrels are getting soaked and disgusted is also probably going to be very emotionally satisfying. You should try to get video for YouTube.
This is great because right beyond it, we have chard, spinach, and we have some vegetables.
A one-stop shopping then, honey. Just
exactly.
Aim it at it. Just realize that you'll have to turn it off when you go out to work or accept the fact that you're going to get hit a couple of times.
Right. Oh, that is a great idea, Mike. And I think my husband will really appreciate that.
All right. Well, yes. We got to band together against evil squirrels.
Almost. Definitely. Definitely.
But, all right, Peg. So
thank you.
I see Fig Newtons in your future.
Oh, I hope so. This plant will also give me figs in the fall.
All right, good. Yeah, double one, yeah.
Yes. Okay, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Good luck.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and suggest a little trick for those who are currently growing salad greens. When the weather warms up and the flavor of the leaves turns bitter, pull up most of the plants but leave a few in place to, quote, bolt. The flowers that'll appear on the big central stalk they send up are perfect for attracting pollinators and beneficial insects to your garden. Just don't go granting a pardon to a percentage of your potager just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and how to care for and not feed lady slipper orchids. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
You Bet Your Garden is made possible in part by Burpee. Burpee has been providing gardeners with seeds, plants, and supplies for growing everything from tomatoes to flowers to gourmet herbs for over a century. More information online at burpee.com.
You're listening to WHYY-FM.
Mike McGrath, right back at you with local events. I'll do double duty today, talking tomatoes at the Greensgrow Farm in the heart of Philadelphia at 1, and then I'll host a fundraiser for the Food for All folks you heard on our show a few weeks back at 6:30 tonight at the Senior Center in Phoenixville. On Saturday, June 2nd, I'll appear at 1 p.m. at the Lower Gwynedd Green event at the historic Ingersoll Clayton House and Farm in Springhouse, PA. And on Saturday evening, June 9th, I'll return to the Companion Plant in Kutztown to discuss weed control, watering, attracting beneficial creatures to beat up your bad bugs, and other timely topics that can make or break your season. We'll post all the details at the events section of our website, youbetyourgarden.org.
It's 80 degrees in Mount Laurel, New Jersey, and 74 degrees in Center City, Philadelphia at 11:39.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, the question of the week. Lady slipper orchids in a garden, an ephemeral springtime treat, the Native American orchid. What do you do not to kill them? Can you get them to propagate and replicate? We'll tell you all about it after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Joe, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling from West Cape May, New Jersey.
Very good. West Cape May, does that mean you're not near the ocean?
No, we're right near the ocean, actually. Cape May and West Cape May are pretty intertwined. If you've ever been to Cape May, you've probably been in West Cape May and didn't even know it at one point or another.
I have been to Cape May, and I've been to Wildwood. I've been in every town along the Jersey Shore. How far do you have to walk to get to the ocean?
Not too far, less than a quarter of a mile.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Okay, we'll rent the house. Now, what are you calling about?
We lost a couple shade trees in the ice storm we had there about 2 years ago, and I've been trying to replace them, and I looked around, and I noticed there's some honey locusts, which seem to weather really well in the ice, and
they're really low on the leaf litter, which was a plus for me. I have a lot of trees in my yard anyhow. So I went ahead and tried to purchase one of those locally, but had trouble, so I had to go online. Went online, and I found a supplier out of Georgia, and I purchased this a 10-foot stock.
Did you say 10-foot?
Well, the box was just about 10-foot, but had roots in it and everything.
Okay,
it was a bare root 10-foot specimen.
That's a big tree to ship. Did that?
Well, it really wasn't. I'll wait to hear what they did. It was basically a stick.
Right.
That they cut off every limb, and all I had in the ground was this 3 feet of root stock that I put in and wound around into the ground, and then they just lopped everything off about eye high.
Oh, right, so they could slide it into like a pool cue box.
Yes, exactly. And I planted it, and late December, I kept calling. They wouldn't go dormant for them to ship, so finally they were able to ship it. I got it late in December, got in the ground there, and now it's starting to sprout.
Right.
And it has nodes, you know, all up and down this trunk. And my question is, do I want to let all these nodes produce shoots this year, its first year, and then start pruning it next year? Or should I try to remove some of the lower ones to force more energy into the upper ones to start a tree shape going?
Oh, no. First of all, all locust trees are very aggressive growers. You know, I know black locust is a tree that's recommended for organic farms because you can continually harvest the tree for use as rot-resistant bedsides and railings and stuff like that, and it'll regrow like a monster. So, you know, at least this was a tree that was going to take their lack of kindness very well, because as you can see, it doesn't seem to have hurt the branching status. Now, you planted it in December. That's kind of late, but you're down the shore. It's a moderate climate. We had a moderate winter. When you planted it, did you plant it high in the ground? You didn't plant it like a lollipop, did you?
No. It's high.
Okay.
It looks like a broomstick in the ground because there's not a limb on it.
Right, which is why I'm going to suggest you do no pruning at
all
this year.
Yeah,
because right now the poor tree doesn't have any solar panels. So
that's what I thought. I thought it needed as much energy this year as it could get.
Right, but that's going to come from leaves, not from branches. And these trees, all members of the locust family, they got a lot of energy for growing branches. Heck, they can regrow their trunk from a stump, so that's not the issue with them. I think this year you want to let it, leaf out. You want to look at it. You're growing it for shade. They do not grow aggressively tall very fast. You're talking about a tree that's probably going to grow like 2 foot a year. It's going to fill out nicely, and it is classified as a shade tree because it does do nice dappled shade. So let's see what happens. Let's see what form it takes on. By the end of the year, you're going to see what this tree wants to look like, and then any pruning you would do during whatever the most dormant season you get is, perhaps January. You know,
usually January is when I do a lot of that kind of pruning.
But I would be gentle with it its first couple of years and not take a lot off. If you like the shape that you end up with when the tree goes dormant this winter, maybe just leave it alone and do it the following year. But certainly this season, do nothing. Let it grow out and let it get some solar energy. Let it feel its oats and show you what it wants to look like.
Okay. Sounds great.
All right, Joe. Good luck.
Thank you for your help.
Take care. 1-888-346-9499. Dana, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Dana. How are you?
I'm good.
And where is Dana good?
I'm in Paoli, Pennsylvania.
Okay, I presume that's where you're bad as well. All right, what can we do for Dana just outside of the city of Philadelphia?
All right. Well, I planted some daffodil bulbs in pots early this spring.
Wait a minute. You planted them early this spring?
Yes.
Okay. You know they're called spring bulbs, but they're supposed to be planted in the fall.
Well, I read some things that if you're planting in containers, you should keep them in a cool place and over the winter and plant them a little bit later so they don't have this horrible freeze-thaw cycle above the ground.
Okay. And, of course, you were rewarded for following that information with the warmest winter in the Philadelphia area's history.
Yes.
So did you pot them up in soil and cool them, or did you just throw the bulbs in the fridge?
I kept the bulbs in an unheated room in my house.
But naked?
But naked, yes.
Okay. Typically, if you are going to force bulbs, which is what you were approaching, you would actually put them into the pot, and then you would put them in a cold room or in a refrigerator that would never see fruit, and chill them for anywhere from 13 to 20 weeks, depending on the variety. But you you planted them this spring, and now we can pick up your story, Dana.
Okay. Well, I was rewarded with a very poor yield. Very few of them came up at all, and the ones that did come up showed no signs of blooming. I started digging in some of these pots, and I'm pulling out these bulbs that never came up, and they're half rotten, and they have this blue green mold growing on the bulbs.
Penicillium. Could be.
From what I've read online, what I'm concerned about is this mold going to have a negative impact on anything else that I might plant in these pots in this soil?
Did you water them incessantly?
Well, for a long period of time, the pots were kind of under the eaves, so they weren't really getting much in the way of rainwater. So I did water them myself, whereas otherwise I wouldn't have bothered and just let them rely on nature's work.
And were the pots enough up in the air, so to speak, that the drain holes were unobscured? Or perhaps could the drain holes have been blocked by sitting on top of soil or something?
They were sitting directly on the soil. I don't...
See, what happens often in these situations is a pot that would drain well fills up with water, and then everything inside is going to rot, absolutely guaranteed, whether it's a bulb, a tuber, the roots of another plant. So as we progress through the season, if you're going to use these containers in a somewhat similar area, very simple, just put them up on bricks, a single brick, three bricks, so that the drain holes are obscured. You don't want to, especially because these are not the world's biggest pots. You don't want to put anything in the bottom. You don't want to put gravel or styrofoam peanuts or anything like that. You're going to need all the soil you can. The truth is, we did a question of the week on old potting soil. How can I reuse my old potting soil? And in truth, when it gets heavy and contaminated like this, it is good to start over or at least mix in a new percentage of potting soil. Two-thirds or three-quarters of a soil-free mix mixed in with high-quality compost is the perfect container medium. Were it I, and this had happened, not because of the mold so much, but because this stuff is probably starting to get really tired, I would dump this out to improve the soil around some of my perennials, some of my spring blooming shrubs and trees, and rinse them out just with soap and water, and start fresh with some real nice light loose soil free mix and compost. I think the reward you would get in terms of extra flowers, extra fruits would be well worth it. The only issue I would see with the mold you saw is if you were going to plant more underground crops.
Gotcha. Great. That sounds like exactly what I need.
All right. Good luck.
All right. Thanks so much, Mike.
Take care. My pleasure. Thank you. All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. Caring for Native American lady slipper orchids. You Bet Your Garden producer Alexis Landis, read off this week's question, if you would.
Well, Julia from Berwyn, Pennsylvania writes, I have a small, very small, patch of lady slippers growing in my semi-shady garden that I'd like to encourage. What should I do to make them feel at home or maybe even multiply?
Well, Julia's question immediately made me think of Dr. Bill Mathis, author of The Gardener's Guide to Growing Hardy Perennial Orchids, owner of the Wild Orchid Company, a Pennsylvania-based enterprise that supplies 100% cultivated versions of the fragile treasures, none collected from the wild, and most importantly, a lifelong lover of these great plants. His response to Julia's question? What kind of lady slipper? There are several different varieties, and they all require very different conditions. Luckily, the subject line of Julia's email specified yellow lady slippers. That's good, he replied. They're the easiest of the native terrestrial orchids to care for. But before we get to that care, a short orchid tutorial. Most of the world's orchids are epiphytes, plants that cling to things like trees with their big, strong aerial roots. They are not parasites. They're not taking any nutrients from the plants they cling to. They're just hanging on to them. This is why most houseplant orchids are sold with their roots nestled in big chunks of bark. The vast majority of epiphyte-type orchids would die if their roots were smothered in any kind of soil. But a small percentage of the world's orchids have evolved to naturally grow in soil, although Dr. Mathis stresses that the roots of these orchids look much the same as those of the tree-hugging epiphytes, and they share a similar need for exposure to air and superb drainage. These terrestrial orchids occur worldwide, with a nice handful of species native to the United States. Of these American natives, the best known are the various lady slipper orchids, of which there are numerous varieties with common names that include yellow, pink, showy, and Kentucky lady slippers. Dr. Mathis explains that the basic requirements for yellow lady slippers are excellent drainage and some shade during the day. Now, how much shade depends on where they're growing. They can take almost full sun at the northern limit of their range up in USDA Zone 4. They need dappled shade or semi-shade in the middle of their range, Zones 5 and 6, and they require almost deep shade at their far southern extreme around the edge of Zone 7. They won't survive south of that unless you're up in the mountains or some other cool microclimate, he explains. They just can't take the heat. Now, if these yellow lady slippers just, quote, showed up in the lady's garden, don't change a thing, insists Dr. Mathis, explaining that the seeds of these orchids are so small they can blow into new areas on a windy day from a natural site or to be carried to a new site by wildlife. If such seeds did make their way there, germinated, and the plants grew on their own, her site is already perfect, he explains. Just keep chemical fertilizers away from them. These lady slippers are very low-nutrient plants, and an otherwise normal application of something like Miracle-Gro or Osmocote could kill them. No matter how they got there, it's a good idea to water them during spring and summer droughts, he continues, explaining that, yes, they need excellent drainage, but long periods of dryness can kill them. He adds that the shredded leaf mulch that I, quote, love so much, can do double duty here, as a light mulch over top of the plants for winter protection and around them during the growing season to retain soil moisture and keep weeds at bay. Now, if she bought the plants, I suggest she deadhead the flowers as soon as they start to fade to prevent seed production, he continues. The act of creating those tiny seeds sucks a lot of energy out of the plant, and the odds are 1,000,000 to 1 against those seeds germinating at a created site, no matter how ideal that site may be for adult plants. But again, if these plants did just show up, it means the conditions are perfect for seed germination, he explains. So I'd still deadhead the majority of the flowers, but I would also allow a few to progress and produce seed. And I'd even hand-pollinate them with something like a flat toothpick or a Q-tip to ensure a good seed set. Then be patient. The seed germinates pretty quickly, but the young plants will be subterranean for several years before you see any above-ground leaves. Now, this need for the seed to fall in exactly the right kind of place, with exactly the right kind of symbiotic soil organisms naturally present, is one of the many reasons you should never take any native orchids from the wild, he adds. Left undisturbed, a native colony will self-seed and grow larger over time. But if you take those plants to a new location, the plants themselves often die. And even if they don't, no new seeds are ever going to germinate there. And there are plenty of sources for gardeners to obtain legal, ethical, healthy, ready-to-plant, cultivated lady slippers. There's no need to take plants from the wild, and millions of reasons not to. Well, that sure was some fascinating information about lady slippers now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To carefully review this week's edition, just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes, my producer is threatening to pluck me from the wild if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live, put the actual subject in the subject line, and you might want to check Foist to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week, find the solution to hundreds of garden problems in our Garden Answers A to Z section, and or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and especially download this week's podcast. We loves our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week has been Kevin, don't call me Merv Griffin. Our webmaster is Baneful Rich Banowitz. His faithful internet companion is Sarah Kazar. Always a lady, Alexis Landis, produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. We bid a fond farewell to our slippery native production assistant, Amanda McGrath, who has completed her tour of duty as well as her degree at Temple University's famed School of Communication and now has to go find a real job. Gainfully employed already is our esteemed editor, Al Banks. I'm otherwise unemployable, Mike McGrath, and that's why I'll see you again next week. What's going on when different color patches appear in a lawn? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss annual bluegrass, invasive Bermuda grass, and how to try and recover your turf, plus your fabulous phone calls.
Next Saturday at 11 o'clock on You Bet Your Garden.
Abington Memorial Hospital proudly supports WHYY and offers new technology that can permanently repair a condition commonly known as a hole in the heart. Interventional cardiologists are using a self-expandable